Welcome to the Candy Valentino Show, the podcast for founders, investors, and entrepreneurs, where we have honest conversations about what it takes to grow your business, build more wealth, and create financial freedom.
All right, everyone, I am so excited for you to listen to this conversation because I feel like this is going to be a mini masterclass on marketing and copy and all things building businesses. So, Alex, thanks so much for joining us today.
I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me, Candy.
All the way from Canada, virtually. So I love that we were able to do this. We were trying to make it work in person, but this is so great because I think this is so important for entrepreneurs to get and to understand. And you have had such a journey, which I definitely want to unpack too. You know, more of an accidental entrepreneur kind of in the beginning and then really scaled and grew and now have hundreds of thousands of clients and hundreds of thousands of subs on YouTube. So I'd love to give people that are tuning in a quick little impactful piece of value in the beginning. So we obviously have a lot of entrepreneurs and we know it's so important for messaging, marketing, and copy in order for them to communicate what they are selling. Because you can have the best service or product, but if you can't communicate it to your audience, you're dead in the water. What are a few things that we can give them that are quick wins to amplify whether your choice, their messaging, their copy, or their marketing?
So many things. I would say if I had to really boil down great marketing and great copywriting, which is one and the same. I always say copywriting is just marketing, but it has the added skill set of being able to communicate, you know, effectively through words. Specificity is your friend when it comes to marketing. It's something that I talk to so many business owners about, so many clients across multiple niches. When you can serve a lot of people, it feels hard to be specific because you feel like you're alienating a huge part of your audience. I always talk about the importance of going narrow first, making sure you're laser focusing on a singular problem you're helping your audience address. And then once they are in your world or in your universe, you can absolutely go more broad and offer more services, expand your messaging. I think that's more important now than ever because so many people are starting businesses, entering the market. It's no longer about being the cheapest option. It's no longer about being the fastest option. You need to get your audience's attention and fast. And you do that through being specific. So I would say get really, really clear on how you can communicate what you do as quickly as possible, what problem you solve, and then do that through using a great hook. So a hook is the number one skill in copywriting and marketing that if I could teach anything, anyone, it would be this. Because attention is our greatest currency right now in marketing. And you don't have to scroll very far to see a million different other things vying for your audience's attention. So knowing how to be specific, speak to your audience's needs, but then get their attention fast by promising a benefit, you know, calling out a common challenge, using relevancy in terms of what's going on in the lives, hearts, minds of your audience right now. Being able to use a powerful hook is going to get their attention fast and bring them into your world a lot quicker.
I love that. So, and I know everyone's thinking, okay, give us an example. So what is a specific example of somebody that's like, here's a very specificity and here's general and why the one that's specific would be better?
So I was a freelance copywriter and marketing consultant in the personal development space, the self-help space for almost 10 years. And I like to use this as an example because in personal development, it's really hard to be specific, especially when you're a coach or you offer services that just improve someone's general well-being, health, wealth, happiness.
Yeah.
The problem with that is that's what everybody's doing in the personal development space. So if you can be specific in one of three ways, either the benefit that you solve. So let's say you help someone sleep better as the first entry point into your brand, your world, or you are combating a common challenge. So not the benefit, but the specific pain point that someone is experiencing and more specifically who they are. So let's say you help mothers sleep better. The third way to be more specific is the way in which you do it. So there's a lot of different ways to improve sleep. It could be meditation. It could be, you know, tapping. It could be breath work. There's all these different modalities of personal development. The more specific you can be, this is called the mechanism in marketing. The more specific you can be in the way in which you deliver results, again, the more that's going to set you apart. So being really clear about the benefit and the challenge you solve, who specifically you speak to, and how you do it. I call that those three things together your unique selling proposition. And that is kind of like your elevator spiel. That's like, hey, here's who I help. Here's how I do it. And what problem I help you solve. And the more specific you can be on that in the beginning, the more powerful your marketing will be.
That's so good. And so let's expand on that beyond a brand or a coach, right, that's in personal development. If we have someone that's a roofer or is an HVAC or a contractor in some way, could the company, the business, still communicate their unique selling proposition in the same way?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And when I talk about a brand, I think of personal brand and I think of company brand. To me, they're kind of one in the same, because even business brands are personalities. And now more than ever, people want to buy from brands and businesses and people that share their values and that they feel like they're the solution for me. You mentioned roofing. I was driving down the street the other day, and I live in the Pacific Northwest. I live in Vancouver, and I saw a company that on the side of their vehicle were selling one thing, and it was, we remove moss from your roof. And I remember thinking, that's so brilliant, because I'm sure they do other forms of gutter cleaning, roof cleaning, all types of roof stuff. But living in the Pacific Northwest, they knew that moss growing on roofs is a problem. And so being able to communicate that, it's sort of the tip of the spear. It's the what gets people's attention, because it's specific. It's talking to a very clear problem. And then I'm sure once people call in, they go, oh yeah, well, we could call, or we could clear your gutters. We could come every season change. We could do yard maintenance. I mean, I don't know. I didn't call them, but I'm sure that was just one service they offer. But I thought it was really brilliant to be able to clearly communicate that up front and bring people in the door.
And it's also, if we extrapolate on this, it's also making it so much cheaper in digital marketing to go after that one target, as opposed to casting such a wide net for, like, you know, home services. It's like home service. Okay, so if it's home services, then it's roofing. If it's roofing, then it's gutter cleaning. If it's, you know, and you can really whittle down to get really clear for SEO and marketing. And I think that what you're sharing without saying it yet, but I'd love to unpack that, is like, this is how that unique selling proposition and narrowing ties into their overall marketing. And it keeps their budgets low. Are you finding that with all the companies that you've worked with and everyone that you're helping, that overall their marketing budget is not only more efficient, but it's more effective for less?
Yeah. And I think the best way to think about this is that when people have a problem, they're searching that problem. That is what is going on in their reality. That is what they care about. So it doesn't mean you can't have multiple different advertising strategies to target all these individual problems, but you're using that specific messaging at the front of your funnel to then bring people in and then show them everything else you have once you solve that immediate problem. I experienced this when I was starting my YouTube channel. As someone who had been a marketing consultant for almost 10 years, I was told by so many people, you should start a marketing YouTube channel. You should talk about all things marketing. And I'm thinking, all things marketing? You could throw a stone and hit a million people who are teaching all things marketing online. And so for me, and this was a bit of a stretch, is I thought, okay, I'm going to start talking about copywriting. And I felt uncomfortable doing that because I didn't want to be put into, I'm just a copywriter box. Whatever I was telling myself about, like, and people still will be like, oh, you're a copywriter. And I go, yep, I totally am. But I actually was a marketing consultant who happened to do some copywriting for 10 years. But copywriting was the tip of the spear for me. That's what set me apart. That's what allowed me to grow my business so fast. That's what got me attention, because people were looking for specific messaging related problems. Now that I've grown an audience and I have, you know, thousands and thousands of customers, I can talk about whatever I want, and they love it. And so it's allowing people to come into your world, solving a specific problem, diversifying that on the front end if you want to target multiple different challenges in your messaging. But it absolutely does optimize your marketing budget, as you said, and helps you be more laser focused with conversions.
I love it. And I love that you shared that you met people had said about doing marketing on YouTube, because I, just coming into this space from building businesses behind the scenes for so long, I had so many people, experienced, talented, New York Times bestselling authors and like massive influencers with millions of followers telling me what I should do. And the whole time I was like, that doesn't make, like, it just didn't make sense to me to go that specific route. So I went a different route. And I talk about finance and numbers and data and like all the stuff that most people say aren't sexy and that people don't want to hear about. But it was a way, and it's kind of like what you're saying. Can I teach someone to scale or build a team or expand to additional locations? Yes. But finance is like the avenue that I do it through. Do you think that if you would have listened and just done a marketing YouTube channel, that you would be where you are within your business right now? Do you think it would have taken longer?
Absolutely not. No. I mean, I don't want to say that, you know, I still wouldn't have done a great job and built an audience, but I think initially, and it's kind of this idea of, I thought when I started my YouTube channel, actually at first, that I was going to be teaching copywriting solely to entrepreneurs and business owners, because that was what I had been doing for the last 10 years. And then I slowly realized that my dream clients and these multi-million dollar companies that I was working with were not hanging out on YouTube watching YouTube videos. And so what happened was, because I was speaking so specifically about copywriting, I attracted a whole audience of people who wanted to learn how to write and start a writing business. And that wasn't even on my radar. So I think because I was specific, it opened up this whole new avenue that wasn't even a consideration when I just got started. And again, like I said, I was a bit nervous to go there because I thought, I don't know if that's the business that I want. And I had to sort of think about it. But now it's come back full circle. So yes, I've built this whole audience of freelancers who want to learn how to write and serve business owners. But now I'm also back to coaching business owners and speaking at events and training and doing all of the stuff I did before. So I eventually got to where I thought I was going. It just was a roundabout way, but in the process built, you know, a great business serving an amazing audience that I never would have realized if I hadn't gone specific.
Yeah, I love these stories where people set out to do one thing, and it's so common in business, like, and it evolves into something completely different. And I think it's why it's so important that whatever it is that you want to accomplish, you can't know all of the 52 steps to get there. Because if you do, it might actually take you, number one, you'll be overwhelmed and not step forward. Number two, you're not going to achieve and become who you need to be to accomplish actually something that's greater. Because maybe that, you know, you starting out as a solopreneur in the beginning and then realizing, I want to grow this, there was a lot of things that you had to change about your mindset and your views and your identity. So can we unpack a little bit about Alex that wanted to be a fancy attorney and then decided to go into corporate and then you start freelancing on your own? And what some of those shifts and those identities that you had to change in order to be like, you know what, I'm going to actually hire some people and really make this a business? Because here's what I find. Most people get stuck in this solopreneur world. It's like, that's the new term. My term, it's you're self-employed, which nothing's wrong with that. Right. If that's what you want to do, what you do for someone else, but do it for yourself. But it's not growing a business because that business lives and dies on you. So what were some of the shifts that you created to be self-employed to really build a business?
Yeah, I love talking about this because similar to what you said just a second ago, I feel like my business has, from the outside looking in, everyone goes, oh, you must have known that was the business you wanted to create. It's like, not at all. I think entrepreneurship and building a business, and everyone listening to this will agree, it's about trying something and then pivoting fast if it doesn't work and trying something else and just making decisions no matter what, even if it's the wrong one. And I think that's sort of how my journey has been. I mean, I was planning to be an attorney. I wanted to be a lawyer. I come from a very academic family. Education was just always the path laid out that this is how you create the life you want. And when I, you know, dawned on me that maybe that wasn't something I wanted to do, it wasn't this big epiphany like, nope, that's it. I'm not going to be a lawyer. It definitely took me some time to go, okay, well, maybe I'm just not going to be a lawyer yet. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go work overseas. I applied for a job at a publishing company, Mind Valley, if anyone has heard of it. At the time, it was a tiny little startup in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. Here I was as a fresh, you know, university graduate, going, I'm just going to go take a gap year and like sow my oats, have some fun, and work at this publishing company as an intern. So I was answering customer support emails. I mean, I was doing it all because I just wanted to travel and have fun. And then it was sometime in that journey that I realized, actually, I think I want to do business. And I think I want to start, work for myself, be self-employed, as you said. And so I stayed at Mindvalley for 3.5 years. And then I moved back to Canada. So the big part of my move was I had some health issues. I was so far away from my family. I quit my 9-to-5 job, and it was terrifying because I really had no safety net or no plan on what I wanted to do other than I'm going to work for myself, whatever that looks like. And that's what I did. I freelanced, I hustled, I made, met clients at networking events, started doing their copywriting, marketing, building funnels, consulting. And I did that for 8 years. But you mentioned that change of identity. I mean, the identity shift I had to go through from employed to self-employed was huge, with all of the stuff that comes up with it, of course. But a lot of people who knew me during that time and know my personality would always say to me, I can't believe you work behind the scenes in business. You just have such a personality for, being the face, being the brand. Like, why aren't you doing that? And for the longest time, I just told myself it wasn't what I wanted. I told myself, no, I want freedom, that having a business that I can travel the world right from a train in Italy. Like, that was my identity. But if I'm really being honest, I was absolutely terrified of making that shift. Because as soon as you put yourself out there, it's this fear of, will I publicly fail? Mm-hmm. Will people see that I've tried to do something different and it's not going to work out? Mm-hmm. I started my YouTube channel really just as a way to get out of my own way, not really knowing what path that I was going to follow after that. And then that took me on a whole other journey that I wasn't even expecting. So it was a lot of just reevaluating and figuring it out as I went, as you said.
Yeah. Well, I always say business is pretty simple, and you touched on this in a different way. I always say it's analysis, it's capital, and it's action. And it is switching back and forth all the time. The second you take action, you got to go back through analysis, capital, and action. And so it's like that throwing balls against the wall to see what sticks. Because even if they gave you the playbook of how to build what you've built, you wouldn't have done it, because you had to become who you became in order to do what you're doing. And so I think that's so important for everyone to hear, and also to capture that when you build a team and you build a business, as opposed to just being self-employed, you are making promises to other people that is calling your highest self to show up. You're making promises that you don't know how to deliver. And I think that mm-hmm. if you can start to lean into that risk, and start to fall into the fear of failure, it is amazing what you can accomplish. Because if you wouldn't have done those things and taken those big risks that you would have failed publicly, you would still be self-employed, freelance Alex, and you wouldn't have had the impact that you've had in so many people's lives. Like, you're helping so many other people through teaching them how to write copy to build their own businesses as a result.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and you're right. I mean, that first hire was one of the hardest decisions I've ever had to make. Mm-hmm. Now I have a team of 10, and exactly what you said, it's that fear of every day showing up and going, I'm paying for them to survive and raise their kids, and it becomes real. But I think the thing I realized is, when you really live in that alignment and do what you are meant to do, you attract the team that's rooting for you and that's there and they're showing up for you, and they're just as committed to the mission as you are. And I think that's been a huge shift, and something that I had to work on really receiving is like, oh, they want this too. This isn't just me being the boss, but really moving into that place and not knowing where we're going to go next, and trying to paint the next 10 years and go, I don't even know what that looks like yet. I was on a mastermind call with Naveen Jain, who is the founder of Moon Express. And he said something that really stuck with me. So he literally has a company that sends rockets to the moon. Wow. And he said, when I founded this company — he's now the founder of Viome, the medical company — he said, when I founded the company that I knew would send rockets to the moon, the technology to do that didn't even exist yet. Wow. And I'm like, wow, could you imagine if he waited until that technology existed mm-hmm. to then start the company? Because that would then prove that there was a path forward and he could do it. He was mm-hmm. like, no, I'm going to do it now. And I think about that a lot when I make decisions. It's like, what do I don't know yet? And what do I just have to trust will be there and go for it.
There's so much trust. And I think that even goes back to team, right? That's why it's so important for you to be the visionary, because your team is buying into that vision. I always think back, and one of the smartest things by accident that I did was hiring 7 people. I had 7 employees the day that I opened my first business at 19.
Wow.
What a gift it was, because I was always a person of my word. If I'm going to tell you I'm doing something, I'm doing something. So if I'm going to tell you that you're leaving your job and I'm going to provide a job for you and have you be able to make money, I'm going to make sure that it's going to happen. I don't know how, but I think that's what's so important. If you just make those promises and you have integrity and you start to sort and sift through your life experiences and talking to other people that have done it too, you start to show up in a whole other way that you didn't even realize you were capable of. And I think that's what's incredible about just what you've talked about and shared with your journey, that you've had to do that over and over and over again in real time. And it's evolved into something that you wouldn't even have been able to craft from the beginning. Now, I want to touch a little bit on, I got to go back to hooks for a second, because I think I always like to give everyone a little bit of an action piece. Like once you're done listening to this episode, don't just go on to your day, like stop and create a piece of content, because the only way that you're ever going to get better is to do the reps, right? So what could we share with somebody that's listening right now that's like, okay, I keep hearing about this hook story offer thing or this hook story CTA, like what is a great hook? Is there just a general framework or formula in order to craft a great hook?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different types of hooks. And when I think of a hook, at its core, it's relevancy. It's relevancy to your audience. And so as I mentioned, it's calling out a specific benefit. Hey, do you want to sleep better tonight? For someone who doesn't sleep, that is a strong hook, because they're seeing themselves in this hook and going, "Yes, I do." Or calling out the challenge is the flip side of that. Did you sleep terribly last night? Also, relevancy in terms of what's going on in the world. So if you ever see a hook that's calling out, Taylor Swift or any of these things that you just can't open your phone without scrolling and seeing, that is a strong type of a hook. There's also, demonstration. Look at what this person did and the results they got, before and after type of a hook. I'm trying to think of different, there's 16 that I teach, and they're all different depending on different niches. What I'm happy to give your people actually is I have a guide of 99 fill in the blank hook templates that you can put in the show notes of the podcast.
Love it.
And it'll kind of get your gears turning on how you might use hooks in your marketing. Because when you think of a hook, I want you to think of it as the first few words that anyone might see in either a TikTok video, a reel, a social caption, the subject line of an email, the first line of a landing page. It is calling out exactly what your reader cares about and presenting it in a way that opens a loop, which is another marketing term. And I'm trying to be careful about not throwing all these terms on tops of terms, but a good hook opens a loop. And what that means is it's giving a preview of something to come. It's teasing that they're going to learn something. The 5 tips to sleeping better tonight is a great hook, because people go, "Oh, I'm going to learn 5 things. I want to close that loop that's been open in my brain." Mm-hmm. A cliffhanger. This person tried this thing and you'll never guess what happened next. I mean, that's a really common one that we see, which is a little bit overused and kind of clickbaity, but it is simply calling out your audience and letting them feel like, "Oh, you're talking to me."
I love it. And I think that we will absolutely take you up on the 99 fill in the blank. So we'll get all that info and we'll link it in the show notes for everyone to have. With that said, you touched on something. You said that this might be overused a little bit or it gets a little clickbaity. Yeah. I think also the 5 things to blank, we use that a ton. And when we don't use it, people don't typically like it as much. 2 tax tips to help you save more money. Like, people like that. Is there any evolution coming? Do you see kind of where marketing is shifting to? Is that changing in some way, or are people just doubling down on it? What's kind of, if you could like peel back the magic 8-ball, what would you see that you could share with us of how marketing's evolving?
Yeah. So certain things like that, no matter what, I personally believe that'll always work. And that's because when you use numbers in hooks, people love learning in frameworks. It opens a loop by simply saying a number. If I tell you I'm going to share 5 tips and I only share 2, you better believe everyone's going to be like, what about the other three? People love learning in sets and frameworks. I don't think that's going to change. And I think that's the beauty of marketing, is that a lot of people get distracted and excited by marketing trends, tools, technology, and they think that's marketing. Those are marketing systems. Those are marketing tools. Those can help you do your marketing job faster. But marketing at its core is persuasion, and it's meeting your customers where they're at and talking about what they care about and then presenting a solution in a powerful way. And so in some ways, marketing from a psychology perspective hasn't really shifted. We're humans. We care about the same things. So certain things like that, teaching in frameworks, speaking to your audience's core challenges, presenting benefits in a way that is persuasive, I don't believe that is changing. That is rooted in human psychology. What I do feel is changing is buyer behavior and the way that we receive information. And so the shift that I'm seeing happening as we move into a new year with marketing is it's now easier than ever for anybody to create and publish content online. It used to be that you could start an Instagram account, and if you had pretty photos, that was enough to really go, wow, look at that. You know, you look at the early day influencers. Now I think what's happening is there's so much fluff. I'm toning down my language, but there's so
you
much
don't have
fluff
to with this audience. That I'm a straight shooter
there's
and
so
they
much
know
crap.
It.
Yeah, there's so much crap being published online because of things like generative AI, which, by the way, as a copywriter, I think it's a great tool. I think it's powerful for any writer, marketer, business owner to add it into their arsenal. But what's happening is it's becoming this one giant distraction where people think that is the be all end all. And they're forgetting about the timeless marketing truths, as we've been talking about, that is actually how they're going to motivate the masses and get into the hearts and minds of their consumers. And so where I see marketing shifting is doing a lot more conversational type of marketing, doing a lot more live type of marketing, doing a lot more what you're doing right now, podcasting, content creation, allowing your audience to get to know you, because people are taking longer to make buying decisions now, longer than they ever have before. And it's because there are so many more options available.
Yeah.
And there's so many things vying for their attention. So we're not only competing with the business that's offering the same thing as we are. We're also competing with the doom scroll on TikTok, where there's someone doing a funny thing over here that's more interesting than watching an ad that's going to, you know, get me to buy something. And so I really challenge a lot of business owners to actually double down on their messaging and their branding and figuring out what is it that they stand for? What are their values? How do they want to show up for their audience? How do they want to help their audience solve problems? And being okay with their customers taking longer to make those buying decisions and not writing them off when they don't purchase in the first week. Because old school marketing used to be, if they don't buy within a week, they're dead. They're mm-hmm. never going to buy. And that's just not the case anymore. My average customer takes over 30 days to make their first purchase with me. And if I ignored them, my business would be half the size.
Yeah, I love that. I love that you know that too, because the KPI, like that's obviously a KPI that you are measuring all the time, that you're watching all the time. Otherwise, if you were all of those old school digital marketing, I always would hear the same thing. You email them for a week. If they don't buy, you either like scrub the list or, you know, just send them a couple value before you sell to them again. And so it's so good to know that. And everyone that's watching and listening right now, if you do not know what your average sales cycle is, that should be one thing that you should deep dive on and try to figure that mm-hmm. out to see if that's changing, to Alex's point, and it's taking a little bit longer. Now, how does that apply to long form? Because the hooks that we talked about and getting the conversion and grabbing attention, I mean, I noticed some of our analytics are showing that it's like 5 seconds, like 4 to 5 seconds. If we don't capture them in the first part, they're not even getting halfway through. How do you find, you obviously have a massive YouTube channel, how do you find that that also applies or doesn't to long form and YouTube?
Yeah, so the way that I kind of think of my business is I think of creating as many touch points as possible. So I have my YouTube channel, but I also do short form content. I also post on LinkedIn. I think we post on Twitter or X or whatever it's called now. The way I see my business, and by the way, the average customer of mine interacts across 34 touch points on average before they make their first purchase. That has tripled in the last 15 years. And so again, we tend to think of this old school linear model of marketing. And then I've heard so many people complain that their marketing's not working. And I think it's because we're used to looking at just these very step-by-step metrics, and we're not actually paying attention to what else are they doing in your universe. And so for me, I tend to think of everything that I create on my YouTube channel, Instagram, all my social accounts, all of that is very top of funnel. And I'm like, if we can just get more eyeballs on our stuff, even if they're only watching for 5 seconds, you know, we try to test different hooks. We're now doing new intros in our short form video where like I make a blooper or I say something and then we cut really quick because people are interested in real. Mm-hmm. They want to see who is this person who's, you know, on this glossy background and with the nice captions, and how do we show up in a way that makes people go, oh, this is different. I haven't seen this before. And so knowing that while it may feel like you're creating all this content and, oh, you know, this one didn't get as many views or that didn't pop like I think it would, trusting that if you are getting interaction, that is still one touch point that's going to ultimately help your customers move closer towards a purchasing decision with you. And so while it is hard to track, and attribution is probably one of the biggest challenges in online marketing, the way I look at that is if we can get more eyeballs and then get more people on our email list, and that's the KPI to me that I care the most about is getting them on my email list, then I know from there that we can monetize, whether it takes a week, whether it takes years. I have customers that literally don't buy from me for a year longer. And making sure we're speaking to all of those buyers at different places on the journey.
Are you monitoring? Is it a software that you've developed, or do you have a specific tech stack that you know how many touch points they have before they hit your email list? Is that the 34 number you threw out, which I'm obsessed that you knew that?
Yeah, I know. And you know, and again, it's not perfect. And this is what my team always says to me, because I'm like, I need to know this number. And they're like, okay, well, we could kind of say that this is the average, but sometimes it's higher, sometimes it's lower. And I'm like, okay, we use a tool called Segmetrics, which is a attribution and tracking software. Before that, we used something called Wicked Reports, which was where that metric came from after running a lot of different reports and looking at that. So it's not something I developed. It is using a turnkey SaaS tool. Maybe at some point it will be something that we develop, but we only really got our marketing dialed in this, or our metrics dialed in this year. And as someone who comes from years and years and years of marketing and working with larger companies who had metrics and tracking and attribution in place, I felt like I was flying blind for the first 3 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, it was like, if I have more money coming in than I'm spending, I'm winning. And I'm sure you're like, oh my gosh, like, no, as a finance expert. So that was a big shift that we made in recent year, in the, you know, really since the top of this year, was I don't care if we slow down a little bit in order to get more clarity on our metrics, because I feel that the market's shifting, and without the metrics, you're kind of flying blind or doing what everyone else is doing, which just seems kind of boring.
Oh, you make my heart sing hearing you talk about the data, because it's so true. Like I always say, you can be really good at one area of business and do your first million, your first 3 million even. But to really start to get sustainable, scalable, and if you ever want to be sellable or exitable, you've got to be able to understand the data and the KPIs, because now you know very easily which valve to turn. It's kind of like you were sharing with the marketing budget. If you get really clear on what your messaging is, you're going to spend less in overall marketing budget. If you get really clear on what your growth valves are in your business before you hit another benchmark, now you know exactly what to turn on or off in order to scale more efficiently. And that's really the name of the game once you break through that first 3 million. It's like, how do you scale and optimize efficiently? And so I'm just obsessing that you're talking about data and how you got really clear on all of that, because it does make you, it takes away the guesswork. When you start to remove the emotion of being an entrepreneur and all the things that you have to do, and you just start looking at the numbers and the data, you can make better informed decisions so that you can scale and grow more quickly and not burn through as much capital. So I love that. Exactly. I know that we are both on a little bit of a time crunch, but I want to just hear a little bit about the entrepreneur that's listening and they're like, I know that I need this. Do I need to learn it? Do I need to outsource it? Like, how can I find out more and really get not only just on the copywriting side, but understanding this marketing component? Because I'll tell you what, Alex, I talk to a lot of people in the marketing space and most of them are full of crap. Like most of them are regurgitating information that they heard. And I actually cleaned that up a little bit. I don't normally talk like that. Most of them are regurgitating information. They haven't actually built a business. It's one thing to talk about a skill set. It's another thing to do it inside of a business while you're growing and scaling it. Two totally different skill sets. So with someone with your experience and your expertise, what could we help people with and how could we teach them? Is it teaching them copy? Do they need to understand it? Because here's what I project, and I would love to know if you disagree or agree. I think with AI, I think it's like another way that you're going to be able to stand out. That when you're not just using blanket AI copy and trying to humanize it, and you really go in and craft it in your own voice or in your brand's voice or in your company's voice, I feel that that's going to be another way that you can cut through. So I actually feel what you're doing is only going to get more valuable with AI, not less valuable. So there was a lot there. So whatever you want to share is what can we draw people into helping them?
Yeah, and I think that's what I would caution to business owners, because I know there's so many people out there teaching that AI is this be-all, end-all, and you can fire your customer support team, you can fire your copywriter, you can fire your marketing team, because AI can do it all for you. That is scary to me, because there's already so much generic crap being published online. And now people who have actually really incredible messages and really incredible products and really are helping people are going to say, oh, well, so-and-so, some expert told me that I just need to use AI and I can let go of my entire creative team. That is just going to create more and more of the same. Anytime there's this massive distraction where everybody zigs, I'm the one that's like, what's happening over here? Where's the opportunity in this? And the opportunity is exactly what you said. The opportunity is there is so much crap being published on the internet right now, and the smartest brands and businesses are using that as an opportunity to double down on their messaging so that they can rise up above the noise. Because again, we all think about AI from a business perspective. I go to masterminds and everyone's talking about how much money they're saving by letting go of their support team. And I'm thinking, how do our customers feel about this? And there's now been studies that show, I mean, from the FTC, from all of these different governing bodies that show the rise in complaints because customers are upset. They're fed up. They're savvier than ever and more skeptical than ever now. Mm-hmm. And they are just literally desperate for a real human interaction. Mm-hmm. And so I look at that and I go, how do we double down on our humanness in our marketing?
Yep.
And that obviously comes through your messaging, because copywriting isn't just the sales page that sells your thing. It is how you communicate with your customers via customer support. It is what you put out on social media. It is every single word used to run your business. So to business owners listening, you know, in the beginning, yeah, it makes sense to write your own copy if you are at that place and can't hire a copywriter. However, as a copywriter was the first hire that I made in my business because I knew that I wasn't going to be able to scale without getting support there. So I say, learn the basics, understand your message, because as the brand owner, as the face of the company or the CEO or the president or the owner, whatever it is, you still are the one heralding the brand voice and the message. Get clear on that, then hire a team to support you. Absolutely.
Love it. I could talk to you all day. I love talking to brilliant business people that don't just regurgitate information. And then when they're women, it's a big extra plus size on the side. So I could talk to you all day, but I know people, until we get to do this again, people are going to want to find more information, find you. Where can they find more about you, follow, get some more of this great, great advice?
Yeah. So my brand is Copy Posse. So I'm CopyPosse on Instagram, copyposse.com. And if you are looking to hire copywriters, marketers, strategists in your business, I have a whole community of writers and a job board. I don't take any override on it because I truly believe that the writers that I train are some of the best humans, and I want to help and support other brands and business owners who are looking for writers. So if you go to copyposse.com/writers, we'll put that right on our job board and you'll get interested applicants applying right away for writing positions. So yeah, that's where people can find me.
YouTube, Instagram, website, all the same, Copy Posse. Alex, thank you so much for coming on today and sharing with people. I know they're going to get so much value. And anyone that's watching, listening, go create a piece of content using this. Apply it. Execute. Don't just conceptually take the information. Thank you for everything today. So great having you.
Thanks, Candy. I had so much fun.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to this episode. And if there was something that you loved or you had a specific takeaway, share it and tag me at Candy Valentino. And if you haven't yet, grab your copy of Wealth Habits everywhere books are sold. And for upcoming events or ways to stay connected, head over to candyvalentino.com. That's all for today. Thanks so much for tuning into the show. We'll see you next time.